Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. Thank you for taking the time to join me for another episode of the show. My guest this time around is Dan French, my first Australian guest, and someone who is just getting back on the road to a life of professional permaculture. I reached out to Dan for this interview because of an article that he posted at Permaculture News, which you'll find a link to in the show notes. Dan is chronicling his transition from his previous life to that as a permaculture designer. And he's stepping down this road to make that transition one where he's practicing full-time, that his life and his work is that of a permaculture practitioner. If you've listened to some of the earlier episodes, I've talked about the path to becoming a full-time permaculture designer and opening your own permaculture design business before. But as I've settled into my own role as a permaculture podcaster and interviewing people and presenting this material that I do online and through the website and the various other electronic mediums that you all find me, I thought that it would be refreshing to talk to someone who wants to do the on-the-ground work in person with others as a permaculturist and educator. And Dan's article really caught my attention because of what he's doing. So rather than ramble on as I can, I'd rather let Dan's words speak for himself. I hope you enjoy this time with Dan as much as I did. It was great. It was fun. And thankfully, I did not slip into an Australian accent while talking to him, something I was worried about. So we'll start with a bit of his bio and go from there. You can catch me again at the end of the show for some more thoughts and information. Now on to the interview. All right, then if you're ready, if you could give us a little bit of your background and how you came to permaculture, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, no worries. Well, my background is that I grew up in Adelaide, which is in South Australia, and I grew up in the Adelaide Hills, which is probably about 20 minutes out of the CBD, and it's just on the border of the city. It's close enough to get into the city very quickly, but it's also far enough away that you feel you're in the country. We grew up and we had a very sort of active outdoors life with lots of interaction with the outdoors, and I think that kind of shaped my affinity with the environment. Went through school and afterwards I was wondering what to do with myself, and I went and studied wine marketing at an agricultural college and had a lot of interaction with farmers. Whereas the practical side of winemaking interests me, the marketing side I wasn't so wrapped on. So I didn't take off a career in that, and I sort of drifted and travelled for many years through third world countries and overseas, exploring and surf and mixing with different cultures. And I really took note of many of the places that I visited, especially in the third world. I really noticed how connected the people were to their land and how dependent they were on it, and also their communities. That's something that when I came back to Australia, I often felt was missing. We were living in slightly more of a commercially driven world. I guess I always felt that I wanted to do something to sort of help people become more in tune with the environment and also to help rehabilitate it. And I went on and for that reason studied marine science and fisheries biology at university, and for many years was involved in studies on recreationally fished species and professionally fished species, and gathering information to, I guess, help sustainably manage those species. But in doing so, I guess I always felt a bit limited in the approach and a bit stifled by the stuffiness of science, so to speak, the reporting and the endless statistics and all the sorts of times you had to spend behind a computer, which isn't naturally me. I went from there, Scott, to work in some consultancies, and again, they were very commercially driven, working with big business and restricted by legislation, and there's a lot of rules and regulations that you had to follow, and I often felt that you weren't getting practical results or not immediate practical results. From there, at one stage, I think I was sitting back. I've always liked the building trade and the landscaping trade and the fact that you can do things and stand back at the end of the day and see what you've done and feel a sense of satisfaction regarding that. And I saw this thing called permaculture, and I actually didn't really know what it was. I presumed it was more of a sort of gardening style of education. And I signed up to it, and I went over to New South Wales in the eastern states of Australia to do a two-week permaculture design certificate. And it was during that time I was really, I guess my mind was opened to a new sort of practical, imaginative, applicable science and also design technique. And it kind of seemed very arty and very science dependent, and it seemed like a great blend of traditional knowledge, and but very applicable and very accessible to everyone, rather than, for example, in fishery science, it all being just targeted towards academia, management, or industry people. For me, permaculture seemed to be very applied across, not only it could be applied to fisheries, but it's also applied to horticulture and to sustainable living and village design and all those sorts of things. So it was after I did that, I really sort of fell in love with it and wanted to somehow or other make a career out of it.
And when did you take your PDC, and who was that with?
I took my PDC in January in 2011, and that was with Milkwood Permaculture, who are a educational facility and also an operational farm run by Nick Retar and Kirsten Bradley in a place called Mudgee, which is about 4 hours inland of Sydney in New South Wales. We went and lived on the farm for 2 weeks and I guess immersed ourselves in their projects, and I found that to be exceptionally helpful to see the practical application of permaculture. But they do also do a lot of courses in the city areas and in different states. They were great teachers and good people. What's more, they told us a story of how they had come to where they were at that point. And it was basically through having a passion in permaculture and then just making the decision to get right into it and make it their work as well as their lifestyle. And despite not being, you know, having a background in farming or anything like that, they decided to learn as they go. And I found that incredibly inspirational because they are very successful. They're very widely known. And to see that they just had an idea and thought, well, look, we're not going to let the fact that we don't know everything about it right now hold us back. We're going to do it and we'll be guided by our mistakes as we go. I thought, all right, well, if they can do it, somehow or other, I'm going to do it too.
And you found that process of going and living on their farm for those 2 weeks, seeing their processes, getting the hands-on, and then that they were willing to go try and make mistakes, was inspirational and led you to the path that you're on now?
Definitely. It's always sat with me. And the fact that they're also inspiring other people, I guess I've always had a dream as a youngster of doing practical work which makes a difference, but also inspiring others to do the same, because I think ecological restoration and living in harmony with the planet definitely requires a collaborative effort. And besides that, there's also the ego thing involved as well. Well, you want to feel that you're making a difference and that you're being recognised for making a difference. Well, I do anyway. I'm just speaking from personal experience. Seeing that they were great networkers and that they had an ability to draw experts in the field of permaculture to teach with them, and at the same time they would be learning from the people, the experts, and they would also be sharing that experience with whoever wanted to come along and participate, I thought was a very good model for accelerating their knowledge but also for keeping a business going. So I thought that their approach it's been very effective and it grabbed my interest.
And the path that you're on since you've taken your PDC at Milkwood is one of the reasons why I reached out to you, because you recently wrote an article that was posted to the Permaculture News about your transition to becoming a professional permaculture designer. I've been kind of on my path for a little while now and found the route that I was going to take by interviewing other practitioners and producing my show. But for a lot of people who are just getting started, they don't have necessarily a lot of feedback from other people in the permaculture world who are on the same path as them. A lot of the people who I've gotten to talk to are folks who have been established for a number of years. The episode before this one is someone who took his PDC from Bill Mollison in the United States over 30 years ago. There's all this experience there. And it's that short transition moving into being a professional permaculture practitioner and designer that I think is important to get out there, and is where I'd like you to share your process since your time at Milkwood in moving towards being a professional designer.
Sure. I agree with you 100%, Scott. It's a tough thing to, I guess, feel confident to say, look, this is what I do and I'm going to charge for it and make a living out of it, particularly if you're doing that on your own. I mean, when I left Milkwood, I was full of inspiration and full of ideas, and, you know, there were so many little business ideas that they threw out there and that sort of thing, which I thought, yeah, I can do that. But then you leave and you think, well, how do I do that? That's a tricky thing. I mean, it took me a year and a half of thinking about it to work up the courage to commit to it. But I can tell you now, like in committing to it, all of a sudden it doesn't seem as daunting anymore. And I think that decision is very empowering in itself. And I think I just grew tired over time of, one, working for other people, because I guess I'm a bit arrogant and I like to do things my own way. Also, I find that the structure of other people's businesses a little bit stuffy quite often in my past experience. And I've worked with some great people and some great organisations, but I've always had a feeling that I want to create something myself, and I want to be able to create something for myself. I don't want to be reliant on someone else for my income. So there was that desire there, but there wasn't, you know, a clear path of how to do that. I've got other friends who are successful business owners, and I would talk to them along the way of many ideas that I've always had. And quite often they'd say, well, look, you got to jump into it. You got to jump in the deep end. And that's often the best place to learn to swim, because you have to, if you immerse yourself into something and you commit to it, then, you know, if you want to survive, you got to be confident, and other people got to see that or believe in your confidence. So I think, you know, over that year and a half, I was subtly planning how I was going to get about and actually commit to this path, but I didn't exactly know how. And I read up on a lot of startup business techniques, and I investigated a lot of the ways other people had gone about it. And through doing all of that, I started to form a bit of a step-by-step process of how I was going to go about it. But I guess one of the most intimidating things I found was I was working from home and I was working on my own, and I didn't have that contact, or I didn't have that already established reputation or network of people who recognised me as having some sort of expertise. So when I did make a commitment, I was also conscious of the fact that if I engaged someone else to assist me in that process, that being a business coach, I went, and I think in my article I mentioned Nick Huggins, who runs a service called Permaculture Business World, which is a permaculture business coaching service. I just found in a previous role in particular that I had for a large engineering company where I was an environmental consultant, I was often thrown into situations or jobs that I really had a limited knowledge on, and people would say, can you do this? And I'd say, sure I can. And then I'd think, right, how do I do that? And my first step there was always to look up who were the experts in the field and call them and say, this is what I've got to do, or how would you go about doing something from your point of view, because I recognise you as being someone who I want to learn from, basically. And for starting up a business, that was what I recognised in Nick's service. I read his bio, and that he's previously had run a large successful landscaping company, and then he's gone on and he's now working in conjunction with Jeff Lawton and also Darren Doherty, who came and taught us for a unit during my PDC and who I admired. And by taking on Nick's services, it gave me more confidence. Sort of felt like I wasn't going out there alone. And it also felt like I was drawing on someone who knew how to make a business get up and run and knew the process of how to do that, and in particular, a permaculture business.
You mentioned about Nick Huggins and his work and how that helped you move forward as like a business coach. Two questions that I have for that. One is, does he offer his services worldwide?
He does. I know if you look on his site, there's quite a few people from overseas. I think Fraser Bliss, who's in Canada, he commented on my first post for the Permaculture News website. He's been working a bit with Nick, and I know Nick's also had, I rang up and interviewed Nick as well, because I like to know that, you know, I've done different sort of confidence building and coaching style engagements before, and some of them I've recognised are people who I just didn't click with. So I think it's important that you know who you're working with, you know their background, and you know their actually result driven, and they're basically not selling you a fairy tale. I mean, I did my research on Nick as well, and in doing so, he did mention to me that he's only had the Permaculture Business World up and running for not too long. I think he launched it this year, and I think he said that a lot of the people that he's been working with actually overseas people. I do my coaching sessions using Skype, and I talk to him once a week for an hour, and we just run over what I've been doing, and we set a few new tasks, we answer questions, and basically it's a bit more of a structured process. It's a bit about building a foundation before you open the doors. That's something that anyone can do from anywhere globally who's on Skype.
And Skype is becoming a much more prominent communication tool.
That's right. And, you know, you can communicate easily and share online documents via Google Docs and, you know, all the online tools which you can use in real time or email or whatever it may be. That's the fantastic thing about today's technology, isn't it? You can, like we are, communicate instantaneously from across the world. And, you know, not that you couldn't with telephones, but, of course, the options have been broadened and makes all that sort of stuff, such as business coaching, I think, pretty accessible worldwide.
With where you live in Australia, and I apologize, my Australian geography is horrible. I have an approximate idea of where you are without pulling up a map and drilling down to where you're located. But here in the United States, a lot of our permaculture practitioners are fractured geographically. We'll get, from what I've seen from classes and things, people will come in from a large area to come in for a class. Then when they go back to where they are, they may be the only person in town who practices permaculture, or they may know somebody one town over who's taken a PDC but isn't practicing anymore. And you wind up with kind of this disparate network of people who are knowledgeable about permaculture, but the number of them who are practicing is maybe relatively low, and you have a bit of that loneliness that yes. You mentioned. Where you are you the only person you know who's practicing permaculture?
No, I'm not. There's actually there's a group, or a strong group of permaculturists. They call themselves PASA, Permaculture Association of South Australia, here. And there's actually some very good practitioners here in South Australia as well. There's Graham and Anne-Marie Brookman, who are very closely affiliated with David Holmgren, and they run an annual PDC at their farm, which is about, I guess, an hour out of Adelaide. So there is people here practicing. There's not a lot of people doing it as a business, though, or not, you know, advertising the fact that it's permaculture that they're practicing. I find a lot of people who I've mixed with who do permaculture do it more as a hobby or a community service. There's the PermaBlitz movement, which was started over here in Australia, which is fairly popular, where people go around and jointly design and retrofit or renovate someone's backyard or front yard in a permaculture design. So there's things going on, but I definitely see there being a big opportunity to both make a living but also accelerate the acceptance of permaculture by making it a professional pursuit. There's not, as I mentioned just before, there's not, from what I can see, a great deal of that in South Australia where I am. Also, I think permaculture, I think it needs some professional development to accelerate acceptance in Adelaide and in Australia, and I'd imagine globally, by not only by people and backyarders, but also by businesses and councils and governments and industry on large, because I think I also mentioned that in the article, just the principles are something which can be applied across everything. So getting a business up and running when you haven't got a lot of people around to draw on can be a lonely thing. But I've also found that by the principles of business, a bit like the principles of permaculture, can be widely applicable as well. They're not just limited to one particular industry sector. So by broadening my mind and not only talking to people from permaculture but also talking to people from business, you get a better idea of what works and how to sell your services. And for me, in that way, it's how to accelerate my learning and how to make something that I love, not just something that I can do in my part time, to do all the time.
So you're doing, by reaching out to experts and, well, as I do with this podcast, speaking to people such as yourself, who is an expert at this one little portion of this process, as you go through this, you get to share your knowledge with me. I share that with all of my listeners. We all benefit from your knowledge and experience. And, you know, I directly kind of get to write my own education while interviewing people and asking the questions that I want to. But then from what you're doing in trying to build a business is kind of jumpstart and get past those 3 or 4 years that someone might spend getting a business off the ground, that you can learn from their mistakes and just kind of jumpstart your own business and compress your education into a couple of months and open your doors and be ready to move forward.
Exactly. And I think you're always going to make mistakes, but the thing is, for me, it's not to be held back by the fact that I don't know everything about it. And also to be conscious of that fact that you don't know everything about it, and how you're going to put the pressure on yourself, and how you're going to accelerate your learning, just like the point that you just brought up there, Scott. I think the more people that you talk to in as many diverse fields as possible, you start to realize that there are some sort of universal sort of skills or practices or ways of going about doing things, and that you're not alone. Basically, everyone who's gone before you has made many mistakes as well and have learned from them.
As you get ready to open your doors, from some of the things you've said in our conversation, I'm understanding that you haven't opened for business yet, that you're still putting things together?
That's right. But in doing so, I mean, Nick's actively encouraged me. I guess one of the things he said to me was, okay, the first thing we're going to do is basically you go out and you tell people what you're doing, because it takes a while. You want to be reputation-based. You want your business to come from word of mouth because you've done a good job somewhere else. So people need to know what you're doing. Even if you haven't done any work in this field before, if you built yourself up to a point where you felt that you were confident and you were ready to go, and you went, okay, hi everyone, my name's Dan French and I'm a permaculture consultant, quite often it's not going to be, you're not going to snap your fingers and you're not going to, as soon as you open your doors, start getting jobs. I think Nick's idea of letting people know what you're doing and getting a bit of a soft start that way, for me it has two benefits. It's a networking thing. People start taking you seriously. But second of all, you're committing verbally and you're making promises to other people. For me, that's not the pressure I need, but in another way, it is the pressure that I need to put my back into it, and to go day and night, to have a vision of what I'm actually going to do for other people, and make sure that, you know, that's clear in my own mind and that I build up that skill set. By the time someone asks me to do something, I've already got a sort of set procedure, or I know what it is or how I'm going to go about it, even if I haven't done it before.
A line that my father would use is that you're getting all of your ducks in a row before you launch your business. You're organizing everything in a way so that it all makes sense and you have your personal process down, so that when you begin meeting with customers, you can have that level of professionalism that they would expect by the commitments that you've made from others and that pressure that you've kind of put on yourself by making those promises to others. You can go in with the appropriate level of confidence to sell yourself to your customer and come across as a professional permaculture designer, not necessarily someone who's just kind of getting their feet wet.
Precisely. And confidence, I think, is a big part of it. It's confidence is other people want to see that you have confidence, but you also, for me, I want to feel that, okay, I mentally rehearsed this and I feel confident in going out and doing it as well. So I think it makes it easier for me to back myself. And also, having someone guiding you along the way, to have them as a sounding board, or develop a whole group of people who you can use as a sounding board and bounce ideas off and also get feedback from what you're doing and how you're going about it.
As you put this together, I originally was looking to start my permaculture career similarly to what you're doing as a professional designer, but ran into a number of legal and other hurdles within where I live in the United States, that in order to practice permaculture professionally as a full-time designer presented certain challenges that at the time wasn't able to overcome.
Yes.
Which is then where I took my other skills after taking an advanced permaculture course in teaching, kind of opened my eyes to where my skill set was, that it wasn't really as a teacher or necessarily as a designer, but to use technology to do interviews like this and share other people's messages with the world. But what kind of challenges have you run into with putting together this kind of a business?
There's a lot of challenges. I think some of the biggest challenges are really defining what it is that you're going to be doing. I think from the day dot, from when I actually started telling some other people what I was doing, I really started having to focus on, okay, well, hi there, everyone. I'm going to be a permaculture designer. But I had to start thinking, okay, well, people start naturally asking, well, what is it that you do? And I think to define what it is that you're actually going to offer, I mean, I'm still going through a process of defining that, but each time I revisit and I do another step of building the foundation or getting the ducks in a line, it helps me to become more concise. And that doesn't necessarily pigeonhole me, but it just, if someone asks what you do, it allows you to explain it to them in terms that they understand. And that's going to have to be something really important in permaculture, which is, you know, a word that most people are unfamiliar with. But if you start saying that we're reading the environment to organise your backyard in and symmetry, and we're looking at food gardening, we're looking at water-wise gardening, and we're looking at energy retention and all those things associated with permaculture. Once you start being a bit more definite and also defining the way that you're actually going to do it, and what I mean by that is, okay, you're presenting your client with a range of services. It's not just that we'll come out and we'll have a look around your place and we'll talk to you about sustainability ideas. It's like, okay, well, we can talk to you on the phone and run over your property and your level of eco-literacy and how many people live at your house, what it is that you're seeking from this service, and then we can come out for 2 hours and we can have a look around your site and we can draw up a concept plan, discuss it with you, formalise the plan, give you some education on how to do things. I guess in a way, Scott, it's selling a package. That way you can cost things. So all these things, I guess I'm familiar with in a way, but it's hard to initially get your head around how you're going to do something. That's been one of my biggest challenges, is just being or defining my services and how I'm actually going to make some money out of it. I'm not completely at the legal stage yet, but I am aware of that from other jobs that I've done. And you know, you also got to be aware of the type of advice you provide. I think in that regard, Nick sort of is encouraging me more to lean towards being an educator rather than consultant or a designer. He's talking about how to define your services also will determine the legality of what you're doing and the processes that you have to adhere to. So, look, I'm only just starting on that, so I won't go into it too much. But
what you presented there between how you define your services sounds very similar to what I encountered here. I had gotten far enough along in my business plan and other pieces that I had reached the legal stage. Trying to speak with lawyers in the United States, and obviously I'm not a lawyer, you're not a lawyer, none of this is legal advice, it's just some of the conversations we've had, that little disclaimer, if you will. For me, it was if I were a full-time professional designer who was working with installation in the United States, that put me in the same classification as like a landscape architect.
Yes.
But without a landscape architecture degree, a lot of the protections that are offered via business insurance, liability insurance, and those kinds of things weren't available. And then to practice permaculture in that mode, at least here where I am, again, very specific to my case, here in Pennsylvania, well, that would be illegal, or I wouldn't be able to get the proper insurance and could be essentially sued for like professional malpractice, like a doctor might be, yeah. if someone implemented my advice or my plan and then it caused damage to their property, I could personally be liable for that. And it's a very strange world to try to navigate. As you say, trying to define yourself and your business, permaculture is a word that a lot of people haven't heard or aren't familiar with. So trying to talk to people who are in that risk mitigation, risk management side of things, lawyers and accountants, they wind up then needing to take a look at what you do, and then that's even more research. And at least here, as I say, in Pennsylvania, it was very, very expensive to pursue that line of reasoning.
Yes, it's a very litigious society that we live in, isn't it? It's a whole minefield of obligations and, you know, potential hurdles or things to trip you up. But in that regard, I can really see the merit in what Nick is pushing, in that if you're an educator, you're not bound by so many legalities, because your mission, in a way, is you still might be providing concept designs, you still might be providing subcontracting services or whatever, and that's a different issue. But, you know, if you're educating people and they're contributing along the way and you're trying to empower people to get a better understanding of permaculture and understand how they can act in their own local environment, make a difference and become more self-sufficient, and you're also giving them concept plans along the way and all that sort of thing. And if you're an educator, I guess you're less, from what I understand so far, legally responsible for the outcome. And that's not trying to dodge responsibility. It's just basically, it's like what you're saying. You can get to a point where, depending on how you define your services, you can become incredibly bogged down in legislation and obligations and licenses and all that sort of thing. And really, for me, I'm looking at what's the end result, what do I want to be doing? I mean, really, I want to be making a difference. I don't want to go in and tell someone how they have to do something. I'd like to share with people some knowledge and give them my ideas, but also give them the idea that they really have the power to take control and that I can start them off. But look, they can take it where they want from there, much like many people who go and do some sort of permaculture education feel afterwards. They feel, okay, well, that was incredibly empowering, and now how am I going to go apply it? I guess that's the sort of angle that I'm coming from.
And that matches, even though we're nations and continents apart for laws and everything else, it's very similar to what I've been finding here as a path to take. And I see why a lot of the permaculture implementation is that, like, hobby kind of level, and then a lot of the business comes from teaching. But it also loops back to that idea that it's about defining your business, defining what you're going to do, gives you more direction in finding out how to make that happen within the structures that are available to you.
Yes. Also in doing that, I mean, part of the thing that I've been doing with Nick is also looking at terms and conditions. So I think when you first engage with people, before you go out on the job, you make them aware of your terms and conditions, and you make sure that they define your services and they define what you do and what you don't do. Depending on what you're going to do, in some circumstances, people are going to need some sort of legal and contractual advice from lawyers and that sort of thing. But I think you got to be aware of that. But the first thing is, I guess like you've discovered as well, is you make a commitment to a path that you want to tread. And like you went down one path and you found that perhaps that wasn't the one for you, and all of a sudden you found this other avenue in radio and podcasts and communicating with experts and spreading the knowledge that way. So all that legal stuff can be very scary and whatever, but it shouldn't be a reason not for starting off and getting going, and can discover that along the way, and then you can see how that's going to influence you and how you're going to react. And I think there's still going to be an option for people who want to work in permaculture somehow. It's an imaginative and creative pursuit, and there's countless possibilities.
And that, I think, takes us all the way back to one of the first things that you said about wanting to move down this path, is making the commitment to it. Once you make that commitment to going down this road, follow it wherever it leads, as long as you have that desire to go along. You can then navigate all of the obstacles along the way, but you need to have that will to at least start.
Yep, and that's been a big thing for me. Is a good point to go back on, because just that commitment. I mean, I, in coming to this point in my professional development, I have been researching all sorts of possibilities. I mean, I come from traditionally from a fisheries science background. So I keep looking at possibilities in aquaculture and community managed fisheries and all those sorts of things. And, you know, there's opportunities there, but in Australia, it's a hard to get into field. Saturated with a lot of marine scientists, and quite often I find the jobs to be, or the avenues to be, a little bit stuffy and that sort of thing. So to go into permaculture, I can actually see the crossover into aquaculture, and I can see, if I do become a good designer, that I can actually blend them with what I've learned previously. From that side of things, it made it easier for me to commit to that, because I wasn't shutting off the other thing that I love, which is marine conservation and rehabilitation and waterways and all those sorts of things. But prior to that, I was just thinking about all the different possibilities of things that I can do. And I think, like many people, you're bombarded by so many options these days that sometimes it makes it hard to commit. It certainly has been that way for me. But in making a commitment, it almost seems like I have more options now than I did before committing, because I've made that decision, and it's given me forward momentum, and I can see other possibilities. And previously, when I hadn't committed, I was just thinking, okay, well, I'm just stuck where I am. And, you know, even though I'm not enjoying that as much as I would like to be with my work and all that sort of stuff, it's what I know and it's what I do, and this is my path. But I think to take a chance and to commit is a really empowering thing. And for me, I'm going to give this the best shot I can. But just the fact I commit and I'm taking a chance and all that sort of thing just means that I guess I've freed up my own mind, and it opens up a world of possibilities rather than sitting on the fence, which I've been guilty of in the past.
In some ways, it sounds like the limitations you've placed on yourself by committing to permaculture have actually helped you define the place that you've wanted to go.
Yeah, it's exciting, you know, like it's in commitment. In I've been a very free spirit, and I've run around doing my own things for a long time, but in committing to something, I want to do it really well. And you can't get in, well, I feel from, I can only speak from my own point of view, but I can't do something really well unless I really spend the time and know that that's my main driver at the moment.
And I think that you've provided a nice map for people who would like to walk down the same road as well. For anyone who's just getting started, they've just taken a PDC, or maybe they took one years ago, and they're thinking about getting back into the world of regenerative design and doing what they can to build a better world. Is there anything else that you would like to add to our conversation for the listeners?
I'm, as I stated in the article, I'm on a journey, and I'm learning as I go, and I want to share that with other people, because from my own experience, I build confidence from hearing how other people have gone about things, and to know that my own trials and tribulations are shared, they're common, despite the setbacks and that sort of stuff. I get inspired by people who've overcome that and, you know, achieved whatever it is they're trying to achieve. So, look, I don't know how it's going to all turn out yet, Scott. Fingers crossed. But, I'm going to keep writing about it and keep going, keep evolving. And, you know, as I do that, I keep seeing the way that, I mean, I keep listening and to other people and keep my ear out and networking. And it's inspiring to start to see how permaculture is actually not only becoming more actively used and more people are becoming aware of it, but also you start seeing how permaculture or the principles of permaculture actually are coming out in other fields without it being labelled permaculture or without it being known as permaculture. They shared sort of principles of trying to rebuild communities and environments. I guess my thoughts with other listeners is just, you know, look for inspiration in many different fields, not only in permaculture. Don't shy away from lessons from the business world or from the commercial world, because there's a lot of valuable information, particularly on how people work and how to gain acceptance and to make something or a business or whatever you're trying to achieve, how to breathe longevity into it. And I guess that's the thing. Just look for inspiration wherever you can find it. Don't be scared and give it a go, or be scared, but give it a go anyway.
I'm going to include a link to the original article that I read that first connected me to you. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, can they just leave a comment on that page and you can respond to them there? Or is there another, like a website that you have that they could go to contact you? Or what would be the best way if somebody wanted to follow up?
Yeah, I haven't got a website. I'm in the process of doing that, because I think that's another thing people have to be aware of if they're starting up a business, is to have an online presence or to have some sort of form of communications are a really important thing. But if anyone want to ask me a question or hear any more of what's going on, then they could email me at danjwfrench@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to share my experiences and happy to hear from anyone else who could let me know a thing or two as well.
All right, now make sure that I include that email address in the show notes in a way that should not be spammy, so that people can get in touch with you, but you don't get a lot of robots knocking on your inbox.
Yes, no spam, thank you.
Yes. Feel that we've covered everything that I wanted to in our time together. Thank you very much for taking the time out of your early Australian morning and my evening before we go into the Thanksgiving holiday to sit down and chat for a little bit.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. And look, I think the stuff that you're doing as well is incredibly useful. And I think any way that anyone can network and become more connected to the people who are doing things that they're interested in and learning that way is, I think if you contact people and tell them that you admire what they're doing and you want to learn from them, most people are really happy to share information and they're really happy to share skills, and it's a great way to accelerate your learning.
Thank you for that. It's been a great time talking to you, and I hope to stay in touch and know how you're doing as you move your process forward.
Good on you, Scott. You too, mate.
So that was Dan. Across 15 and a half hours of time zone differences, and at least the Pacific, depending on which direction you want to follow the line between where I am in Pennsylvania to where he is in Australia. But however you get there, I was thankful that he took the time to speak with me in his early morning, and that I was able to arrange my schedule to speak with him at night. And if you'd like to be in touch with Dan and follow his story, you can go to the article linked in the show notes that he first wrote and follow his progression from there and leave comments for him. Or if you want to reach out to him directly via email, that address is danjwfrench@gmail.com. And you'll find that email address broken up on the website, similar to the way that I've shared mine with you, to limit any spam that Dan might receive. As you heard, very personable, easy to talk to. Feel free to reach out to him and see where his journey goes. Also, stick with me. My next episode is an interview with Peter Bain, another one of the elders of the American permaculture movement, author of the Permaculture Handbook, which you can listen to my review of on my website, and we talk about that book, as well as answer some listener questions. That'll be out December 4th, according to the Eastern Standard Schedule, which should be December 5th for some of you in Australia and elsewhere, but of course you can catch it, give a listen, and be there with Peter Bain and I. After that is going to be the December update, which is, of course, information and updates about the show, as well as upcoming classes and a reminder of Peter's touring class schedule. After that will be Connor Stedman returning for our follow-up on soils. More guests and great information planned for the future. And if you've got a few moments, stop by the permaculturepodcast.com/support and see some different ways that you can help keep this show going and growing. We're doing a great job, everybody. Thank you all. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.